Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, does Melbourne have a Sudanese gang problem, or is the Sudanese community just the latest to be the target of what our next guest calls moral panic? Undeniably, Melbourne's had some horrible violence in recent times, but Victoria is heading for an election, and that old friend law and order has increasingly been a battlefield in Victoria. And maybe, just maybe, politics is interfering not only with sober judgment, but also with social cohesion. Federal Coalition MPs, everyone from the Prime Minister to Tony Abbott and Alan Tudge, a frontbencher from Melbourne, have been using the so-called Sudanese gang problem to attack the Victorian government in recent days. Now, they have a statistic that they're relying on. 1% of offences are committed by 0.1% of the population. Well, that does seem like a big multiplier effect, but is it a valid comparison rate? Can you use crime statistics in that way? And what conclusions you draw from it, are they helpful or unhelpful? Professor Rob White is a criminologist from the University of Tasmania. He's a leading expert on youth gangs, and he's the author of the textbook Youth Gangs, Violence and Social Respect.
We've seen these kinds of moral panics with so-called ethnic youth gangs since at least the 1960s. And in the 1960s, it tended to be the Greek and Italian communities that were targeted. In the 1970s, it was Vietnamese. In the 1980s, it was Chinese. In the 1990s, we had the so-called moral panics over Middle Eastern communities. And by the time we get into the present day, it tends to be, particularly in Melbourne, of course, the Sudanese and the African Australians.
You've just described the waves of migration to Australia since the 1960s. In fact, if you go back to the goldfields, you'll find similar claims being made about the Chinese populations that were brought in and came in because of the gold rush. But I guess that's the first. Is that the first evidence of moral panic over crime?
Well, basically, it's the visible minorities do tend to be targeted by the mainstream media, commercial media, for these kinds of moral panics. Now, the interesting thing, of course, particularly if we look at the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, is that in most cases, the people who are the target for the moral panic, for example, in particular, say, the Greeks and Italians in the 60s, we know that, in fact, those communities committed less crime than the established Australian communities. So whilst they were the target of moral panic, they actually committed less crimes as a community.
Well, let's look at the statistics then, because I know from experience that reading crime statistics is can be a creative art. And you need to be very careful the way you read them. All right, so you've just said, for instance, the Greeks and Italians were committing less crime than the overall population. You could say exactly the same thing, I suppose, about the Sudanese community in Victoria, in Melbourne at the moment. They're committing 1% of the crime, according to the figures that were widely quoted during the week by people like Tony Abbott and others, Alan Tudge. So that's 1% of 100. It's a very small proportion of crime. And yet here's the problem. They make up 0.1% of the population, leading to this claim that they therefore commit something like 57, they're 57 times more likely to commit crime. Now, what I've just done is exactly how Tony Abbott and Alan Tudge and others like that read those figures. What, as a criminologist, what would you say?
Well, I'd say two things. Firstly, let's concentrate on the 99%, because that's the significant number. It's not the 1%. And let's figure out who is comprised within that category of 99%. And usually what we find in terms of criminological analysis is it is the established white Australian population that's committing the most of the crimes anyway, but we don't have a moral panic over that. So let's look carefully at the 99%. So that's the first point. The second point is we know, especially when we talk about youth crime, that most youth crime is committed by small groups of people who actually commit most of the crimes. So in fact, even if we could say that there's a disproportionate overrepresentation of, because of the 1% and the 0.01% ratio and so on, it still doesn't tell us very much, because we know that it usually is a small number of people within any particular community that commit a large number of those crimes.
When you look at absolute numbers, the number of Sudanese counted in that 1% of all crimes, the number of people, the number of heads, if you like, is 846 people. So there's not a lot of people, and you could say, well, that might be a very small number of that 846 committing the crime. That seems to be the point that you're making.
Yes. So in fact, it's a small number of people, but within that category of who those people are, there's probably a lot of double counting.
Because they're doing...
In the sense that when we compile the statistics, yeah, we tend to look at, assign a number to the crime and say that crime is committed by somebody from the Sudanese community, but it doesn't tell us whether it's the same person committing a whole bunch of crimes.
Right, right.
Within that, so, and like I said, the whole pattern of youth crime is generally speaking one where a small number of young people commit the gross or largest number of the crimes.
So just looking at that alone, that this number will almost certainly include double counting, one person committing more than one crime, and a small number of people actually in this set, 846 in the set, is it right to say that the point that Tony Abbott and Alan Tudge made, that a Sudanese person is 57 times more likely to commit a crime than the white person living next door, is that claim therefore simply nonsensical?
It's nonsensical and racist. Let's call it for what it is, basically. This is dog whistle politics. We don't talk about crime in racialized terms, except for easily targeted communities who tend to be the visible minorities.
Yes, and as you say, we've seen it before. Well, as you've studied this debate over many, many years, what other conclusions have you been able to come to? I mean, surely you're not saying, for instance, that there wasn't such a thing as organised crime syndicates in European communities or even Asian communities back in the 70s and 80s, the triad gangs. Those things happened. They were realities.
Well... yes and no, because basically, certainly in the area of youth crime, which is where I've done most of my work,
yeah,
it's very easy to call a group of young people hanging out on the street together a gang.
Yes, that's true.
When in fact, it tends to be a group of young people, and if they come from similar backgrounds, say I come from a Vietnamese background, I want to hang out with my mates because we share a similar culture, food tastes, music tastes, and we might speak the same language.
Hmm.
We're not a gang. But we might be perceived to be a gang by an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
Also, bear in mind that most people, not just young people, but most people commit some kind of transgression at some stage. It could be speeding if you're driving, or it could be shoplifting if you're a kid. But that doesn't necessarily make you criminal permanently, and it doesn't necessarily say that you have a criminal character.
Yes.
I think the key thing with all of this stuff is put it into perspective. When I've looked at so-called youth gangs, most of that, in fact, has been labeling. In some cases, there are bona fide groups of young people who have combined together to commit crimes, and that's something that we have to deal with. But we don't necessarily have to view that as a gang. We can call it a criminal group.
And when you do look at that gang, let's say there is one, it may or may not be the critical factor in them coming together that they had a common ethnic background. They might have been a group of kids who went to school together.
Well, in fact, in the research that we've done nationally in places like Sydney, Canberra, Adelaide, even Hobart, in Melbourne, in Perth, and so on, the key defining point is territory. It's not even ethnicity, it's territory. Often then it's combined with ethnicity in some way. But basically, when we look, for example, in Sydney at the Lebanese-Australian young people, they were very conscious of where they lived. And they saw themselves as Australian-Lebanese young people living in particular districts within Sydney, and they wanted to defend and those districts from outsiders, including people from their same ethnic community. if that makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense. Our guest on Open House is Rob White. He's a professor of criminology, a fellow of the Academy of Social Sciences in Australia, no less, and director of sociology and criminology at the University of Tasmania. Well, Rob, what about that claim that, okay, you don't see the same multiplier effect in other big cities? Sydney, for instance, has a similar number of Sudanese, apparently, but doesn't have a so-called Sudanese gang problem.
You know, every time that the media casts its gaze on a particular group, that group all of a sudden has higher crime rates. In other words, when we turn attention to a group, that group will inevitably end up having higher crime rates. Now, that happened in Sydney with the Australian-Lebanese community. It has happened previously in places like Melbourne with the Vietnamese-Australian community. And now we're seeing that there's an intense media scrutiny within Melbourne on the Sudanese-Australian community. And it's no wonder that there's more things being reported. There's more interest on the part of the police to make sure that they intervene adequately because of the moral panics around that community. Mm. So the more that you turn your gaze to any particular community, the more likely that you're going to find wrongdoing, or the more likely that you're going to find citizen and police engagement with that community. So it's not surprising.
It's
media fostered.
Yes. And it's not surprising that you then get people are genuinely frightened. And I think that's one of the cruelest things of all. You see people walk down the street and a person from a relevant ethnic community comes along, or even, you know, in times when we're worried about youth crime and so on, old people suspicious of young people. How awful. How awful to go through your life knowing that you've done nothing wrong and yet people are suspicious of you.
I think the other thing we need to take into account is that amongst those working the hardest to break down the stereotypes and the folk devils that are represented in this image of the African gangs are the police. And in fact, the Victoria Police have been very clear for a long time that we're talking here about a small number of young people who are doing a large part of the crime, and that it's not the whole community. So they're working very closely with the communities to try and deal positively with responding to these issues. Because targeting the whole community is not going to take us anywhere positive at all.
Indeed, it's not. Looking at crime broadly speaking in Australia, how are we doing? Are we seeing reductions in meaningful numbers of crime over the decades?
Well, we are. And I think that, again, we have to go beyond the media images, which sometimes imply that things are getting worse, but they aren't. Mm. What we've seen, particularly in the last decade, is a shrinking of some of the across many different crime categories. And really, compared to many other places around the world, this is not a huge crime-prone country.
Which categories are shrinking?
Things like burglary and theft. But conversely, some of the crimes that are growing would be, certainly we have a lot more attention being turned to things like family violence, domestic violence, violence against women. But by and large, some of these sort of traditional categories of crime are diminishing, like I've mentioned, burglary and theft and so on.
Mm. Well, it's certainly not the image that you get if you do watch our media, particularly certain types of media. Television seems to be particularly good at it, and it's been television that's kicking along this so-called Sudanese issue in recent times. But I can remember being involved in politics, and from that experience, it's very hard to actually educate people about the reality. Do you think people almost want to believe that we're under threat, that things are getting worse?
I think that crime is titillating. And so when we sensationalize crime, we all feel that, oh, that's really interesting. I want to hear more about that story. So we know that crime, or bad news, in fact, sells. Mm. Mm. And so for the commercial media, that's part of the attraction. Mm. Now, whether that's racist seems not to matter very much for certain networks. And I think we should be really clear that it's not all the commercial or networks or the ABC, which are fostering this youth gangs discourse. It's particular commercial networks that are they're really going hammer and tongs on it, because obviously they think it sells and they'll get more people viewing.
Where you see a ratings battle, you'll very often see this type of story.
That's right. And I think that we just have to be sensible about this stuff and remember that these are our neighbors. These are our co-workers. These are the people that we travel with, that we live with, that we have dinner with. And I think it's shameful, actually, and quite disgraceful that we are targeting and stigmatizing whole communities when we know that we are getting wonderful, positive contributions in our multicultural mosaic that is Australia from everyone in all communities.
Well, you can certainly tell that I agree with you. I just wonder, well, we're doing it now. We're talking about it right now. And I've gone to a noted criminologist and I've asked for the facts. How else can people inform themselves? How can we as a society be better than that?
Well, I think one way in which to counter the negative stereotyping is to talk about the achievements of the communities and the individuals within the communities. So in the same week that we have all this hysterical rubbish about so-called African youth gangs in Melbourne, we discovered that one of our Australian athletes has just broken the 800 metres record.
Yes.
And he's, of course, from Sydney's background.
Yes.
So we need to celebrate that fact. You know, one of the better things that we can think of, actually, is MasterChef.
Yes.
Not that I'm into reality TV and stuff, but I have to say, isn't it reassuring to know that of the 25 contestants of MasterChef, we had such a diversity of people, and I, for one, am not afraid of Sasha.
I am completely with you. He's one of our favourites. It is a good show. You know why? Because that show is about encouraging people. And it doesn't judge them by the colour of their skin or where they came from.
Yeah. And I have to say, I the values expressed and demonstrated through that show are quite, for me, amazing and wonderful. It's such a nice corrective because everybody supports everybody else as well. So it might be a competition, but it shows that because you're in competition does not mean that you have to put down the other person. and if you look at the ethnic backgrounds of all of the contestants, then what you see is that everybody is working together for similar purpose.
It also shows over the years how we've benefited from this rich melting pot culture of Australia, benefited in every way, including in our cuisine.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we appreciate your time and for explaining that to us. Rob, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Professor Rob White, criminologist at the University of Tasmania, a leading expert on youth gangs, and as a professional criminologist, as a researcher, some of the truth about the ways that you can and cannot read crime statistics. If you read them only to make your point, and if your point is about things that create division in our society on the basis of race, what does that make you? I think we know the answer to that.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.